From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we rate an Arizona political ad looking to appeal to Latinos. We're looking for the Viva factor.
Text AC Vote and participate. When you text, you will be registered to win MANA tickets on May 4th.
Then we meet a doctor who believes that being socially and politically active is good for your health.
We have to stop seeing health as absence of disease.
We visit Northern California and meet a group of women who stitch their deepest secrets into quilts.
They say, Angeles, how can you do that? It's private, it's you.
And we find out from one artist how the cartoons from the New Yorker magazine are dreamed up.
You can see a Toltec sculpture in the subway, and that's the way I was feeling myself when I moved to New York.
That's all coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us. Immigrant women suffering from domestic violence have many reasons to hide and few legal protections. One of the only federally mandated protections for these women is in the Violence Against Women Act, or VAWA. VAWA provides legal and financial assistance to abuse victims and now stands for renewal in Congress in the middle of a heated election season where debating women's lives has become just one more way to score political points. Cecilia Gaston is the executive director of the Violence Intervention Program, a community-based organization in East Harlem that deals with Latinas and domestic violence. She joins us to talk about how these changes to the VAWA bill could impact immigrant women and their families. She's with us here in the studio. Cecilia, welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria, for inviting us.
Okay, so the Violence Against Women Act expired last year. This is an act that has been renewed for years by both Republicans and Democrats. Essentially, what has VAWA done up until now for immigrant women, and what would these changes mean in terms of immigrant women who are victims of domestic abuse?
For example, in the old VAWA, a woman that is an immigrant that is in a domestic violence situation was brought here, purchased as, you know, one of these mail-order brides. She's being in an abusive relationship, and she now wants some help. She goes to the police, cooperates with the police, everything is documented, and can have now, under the old law, the right to self-petition.
So basically, these are women who, in some cases, as immigrant women, they are dependent upon the men to petition them in terms of determining their legal status in terms of immigration.
That's correct.
But these are the same men who are assaulting them.
That is correct. And the old law allows a woman to self-petition in complete confidentiality while she can still stay living with a batterer until her status is clarified. The new law changes that completely. It puts the adjudicator now that's investigating this case is now a local person that has no training, and the new law is actually requiring them to interview the abuser. That puts the woman who is still living with the abuser in complete danger. And we have been working with the police throughout all of these years to make it possible for the women to come forth out of the secret lives that they lead. Some of these women have been kept prisoners in houses. They've been kept without any relationship outside of their home. So now, if they begin to get the help, now this law just locks them back down in the same place where the abuser has been keeping them prisoner. And these are not only Latinas. This is all of immigrants. This is happening across the board. In New York City, domestic abuse is the only crime that's really galloping at every stage of the way.
It's increasing?
Tremendously, to the extent that the city and the NYPD are horrified because it's out of control in the city. And in this country, the United Nations has identified that in the United States, still 16% of all adults, men and women, still think it's okay to hit your wife.
So, for example, right now with the changes in VAWA, it would actually mean that if you're a woman who's an immigrant who's being domestically abused, the level of evidence to prove that you're a victim right now is actually considered to be more burdensome than if you were applying for asylum?
That is correct. And they're asking that the abuse itself occurred only within 60 days. So anything that occurred before 60 days doesn't count or is not even considered.
So Tell me what you're hearing from women right now here in New York City who know about this possibility of the change to the Violence Against Women Act.
They're saying, no way am I going to call the police. We're actually even telling them, make sure that you make arrangements for your children. Because if something happens and a neighbor calls the police and they take the two of you, your children go into foster care. We are telling people, get help before any crisis. Because if you call 911, the chances of being deported are huge. And the chances that you can actually get help are disappearing completely.
Cecilia Gaston, thank you for being with us on Latino USA and for all of the work that you do.
You're welcome, Maria. Thank you for having us.
Cecilia Gaston is the executive director of the Violence Intervention Program located in East Harlem, New York. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word, and we're back in 30 seconds. That's 30 segundos. Stay with us. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. As we dive deeper into this year's election season, both parties are intensifying their efforts to draw Latino voters. As part of Latino USA's political coverage, we'll be taking a closer look at political ads from around the country aimed at Latinos. We're going to start this series of reports with a story from Arizona. In Phoenix, listeners tuning in to a popular Spanish-language radio station heard ads offering them a chance to express their political opinion and maybe win a concert ticket. But the listeners may not have known what else they would get. From Arizona Public Media, Fernanda Echavarri has more.
This ad aired in English and Spanish on Latino Vibe KBIB, a Spanish-language radio station in Phoenix. It told listeners that if they oppose Arizona's tough immigration law, known as SB 1070, to text the words AC Vote and get a chance to win tickets to a concert featuring the popular Mexican rock band Maná. The ad was paid for by the Arizona Democratic Party. The party's executive director, Luis Heredia, says they're part of a campaign to begin talking with voters
about their frustration and the direction that this state has been heading under Republicans.
Heredia says Democrats are trying to strengthen their relationship with Arizona's Hispanic community. So the focus of the radio campaign was to reach younger Hispanic voters.
They're grabbing information on their cell phone. They're grabbing information from emails.
Shane Wickforce is the communications director for the Arizona Republican Party.
The Arizona Democrat Party is data mining. They're specifically targeting the Hispanic community so that they can later use that data for political purposes.
Wickforce says people texting for a chance to win tickets to the concert may not have known they were signing up to receive robo-dials or mass text messages from the Democratic Party. He admits the ad campaign is legal because the Democratic Party wasn't offering anything in exchange for votes. Wickforce says talking about SB 1070 was a strategic move by the Democratic Party, but the ads may not have attracted Latino voters as effectively as the Democrats had hoped.
Amongst the Hispanic community, the top issues are jobs and the economy and education, and way down at the bottom of the list is immigration.
41-year-old Monica Roldan was one of more than 3,000 people who texted and ended up winning a pair of tickets to Maná. Roldan says she knew entering the sweepstakes would give her number out to the Democratic Party.
It does not bother me at all because I'd rather be informed.
Roldan says she became a U.S. citizen in 2008 in time to vote in the last presidential election.
So ever since that day, I mean, my priority in every election is going to be to vote.
Last week, the Obama campaign also launched a series of Spanish language TV and radio commercials in Colorado, Florida, and Nevada. And Democrats are hoping to deliver Arizona for President Obama. Republicans, however, are confident that Arizona will remain a red state. For Latino USA, I'm Fernanda Echavarri in Tucson.
To hear the complete audio for the ad in English or in Spanish, visit latinousa.org. And now we're going to rate that ad for what we're calling its Viva Factor. Well, since 1952, when presidential candidate Dwight D. Eisenhower started a Viva Eisenhower initiative to appeal to Mexican-American voters, candidates from both parties have attached the word Viva to their names to signal to Latinos. Nixon did it, Clinton did it, Bush and Obama did it. So we're going to rate political ads for their level of pandering to Latino voters by giving them a Come Miércoles rating. Now, if you're confused about what that means, go to the Latino USA website and we'll explain it all to you. But joining us to talk about this Arizona ad that we just heard about is Matt Barreto. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Washington. He's also the co-founder of the polling organization Latino Decisions. He joins us now from KUOW in Seattle, Washington. And welcome to Latino USA, Matt.
Thank you, Marie. It's my pleasure to be here.
So first thing that we're going to do is let's listen to the ad. And this time we're going to hear it in English.
2 years ago, SB 1070 became law, and the demonstrations against that unconstitutional bill were loud, and our voices were heard. But as time passes, nuestras voces against SB 1070 have become nearly silent. It's time to be heard again. Text AC Vote to 707500-7070 and participate. When you text, you will be registered to win MANA tickets on May 4th, paid by the Arizona Democratic
Party. Okay, Matt, apart from the fact that it's like mega super fast talk, you know, this whole ad sounds entirely confusing. And really, by the time that you get to the end of it, you feel whiplashed. So what did just happen with this ad?
Well, I think that's an appropriate description. There's a lot going on. I think overall, it's a good effort, though, of doing this bilingually, of trying to reach out to Latinos and maybe pique their interest with something new. You know, what this ad is seeming to do is to try to get new people registering to vote. So it's not as though they're trying to get people to win these MANA tickets and then they're going to, you know, take them in a back room and talk to them about Obama or something like that.
All right. So Luis Heredia, he's the head of the Arizona Democratic Party, said that the ad was just a way to communicate with young Latinos the way that they prefer, asking them to use their cell phones. The communications director for the state Republican Party, though, called this an instance of data mining. So which is it?
Well, I think modern campaigns are very different than they were 20 years ago, even where people would just go knock door to door. So absolutely, I think the Democratic Party is trying to get information here. At the same time, they didn't say call to win a ticket. They said text us. And I think we're finding that Latinos have very high rates of cell phone usage. And so this could be a very particularly powerful way to engage this segment. Well, it could be that elections for us turn into just one long big Sábado Gigante episode or something like that. But I think this is creative. I would rate it high on the creativity factor.
Okay, so we're going to rate this political ad for its level of pandering to Latino voters. We're calling that the Come Miércoles scale. So how does this one rate?
I think this has a lot of pandering. I'd place it maybe, I don't know where your scale goes, but probably a 7 out of 10.
And that's it for this installment of The Viva Factor. Good talking to you, Matt.
It was my pleasure, Maria, anytime.
Matt Barreto is one of the co-founders of the polling organization Latino Decisions. And to our listeners, if you hear or see a political ad in your community that you think we should check out, visit us at latinousa.org or tweet us at latinousa, all one word. And again, if you're still trying to figure out what Come Miércoles means, go to latinousa.org. Her name is America, and she has a commitment to fight a growing American problem, diabetes and obesity. And America is doing it using community-based, non-traditional methods. Dr. America Bracho founded and runs Latino Health Access, a center focused on community health education in Orange County, California. In that heavily Latino community, there are only 1,000 residents per acre of land. That means that there's only 45 square feet of land per person, which means if you're poor and you're Latino, there's not a lot of green left for you. Dr. Bracho is one of our health heroes, part of our year-long series on Latinos and health, and she joins us from her offices in Santa Ana, California. Welcome to Latino USA, Dr. Bracho.
Thank you so much.
So you came from Venezuela in 1986 to the United States. How did you end up in Orange County focusing your medical work on Latinos, poverty, diabetes, and obesity.
I came to do public health, and then I went to work in Detroit in the HIV epidemic. To fight that, we had to join forces with other groups nationwide and worldwide. And many of those groups were in California. So after some years, I ended up here doing public health at the radio level. And I learned through the radio that a lot of people had questions that were not being answered, that we didn't have services. And then after a year in that radio, we created Latino Health Access.
And you also have what some people might consider a non-traditional response in terms of health solutions. You don't necessarily believe that providing health care is the primary or most evident solution for the health challenges that Latinos face.
That is correct. The major epidemics throughout the history of our planet have been fueled by lack of water, sanitation. So engineering, transportation, good housing, good air is really what prevent diseases and keep people healthy.
So can you paint a picture for us for what these health challenges look like in a typical family that you're dealing with?
Yes, and I'm going to do it probably through the example of a kid that is in the pediatrician office. And the kid is a 10-year-old that is 250 pounds. The pediatrician probably will continue saying, and we need this kid doing some exercise and being active. You are working with low-income communities where people don't have the luxury of having, you know, another person taking care of the kids and taking them to games, where the politicians decide to put liquor stores in that side of town and put the parks in the other side of town. There are a bunch of barriers. And to think that we can remove that because you are a good pediatrician or you are a good doctor or you are a good person or you are a good teacher is naive.
You got involved in building a new park in Santa Ana. It's called the Santa Ana Park. It took 7 years to get the project approved and built. It's going to be open this fall. But talk a little bit about the importance of focusing on a park when you're talking about Latinos and health.
The story is not only about the park, which is probably the conclusion. The story is a story of hope, of unity, of perseverance. So focusing on this park, as we talk about Latino communities, is focusing about equity, participation, inclusion, and also a park.
You're saying for Latinos to be healthy, they need to be socially involved, politically involved, involved in their communities, and that this is going to have a positive impact on their health. And I'm sure there are some people who are saying, that sounds really radical to me.
We have to stop seeing health as absence of disease, and we need to make our neighborhoods healthier. And in that sense, I think that voting and participating is a critical piece to achieve healthy communities.
Dr. Bracho, thank you so much for sharing your very particular view on Latinos and health. It was fascinating.
Thank you so much.
Dr. America Bracho is the founder and director of Latino Health Access, a center focused on community health education in Orange County, California. She spoke to us from Santa Ana, California. And coming up, immigrant women in Northern California tell stories about their lives on Fabric. No se vayan. That's coming up on Latino USA. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The Anderson Valley in Northern California is well known for its apple orchards and vineyards. But the people who work in these fields, mostly immigrants from Mexico, have a much lower profile. A group of them make up an unusual quilting bee. They're called Los Hilos de la Vida, Threads of Life. And reporter Lisa Morehouse has this story.
In the parking lot behind Anderson Valley Elementary School, there's a portable classroom that's home to Los Hilos de la Vida. Maria Hernandez unfurls her recently finished quilt, a 6-foot image of Jesus.
It came out very beautiful.
Her friend balances precariously on a folding chair, trying to hang the quilt.
And if I die?
If you die, you die with Jesus.
You die happy.
The quilt is striking, made of layers and layers of cloth and thread. Hernandez embroidered the face of Jesus, sewed a satin robe, and used strips of fabric and metallic thread to symbolize blood and water pouring from his heart.
Qué preciosísima.
This quilt is not for sales. Maybe it's for show the public, for the church, not for sales. Very special for me.
Many of the quilts made by members of Los Hilos de la Vida tackle serious topics like alcohol abuse and abortion, issues that matter deeply to them. But that wasn't how this group got started. In 2003, the local elementary school got funding for reading and parenting classes. Molly Johnson Martinez was leading these classes. And then she met a quilter.
And I thought, ha, we'll have a quilting bee. Everybody will get together and complain about their kids. And then we'll have teachable moments and I can teach parenting. And much to our surprise, people just wanted to work. They just wanted to have their creative time because they'd never had it. They'd been working in the field since they were, you know, second grade level.
That was January 2005. By March, they had enough for a show at a local restaurant. Ana Carrillo was an early member of this group, and she recruited her mother and sister.
Everybody, every time, is very happy here. And the stress, no mass stress, no work, no husband, no kids, only women here.
A recurring topic is the U.S.-Mexico border. Project director Molly Johnson Martinez shows a large quilt made by Carmela Valdivia.
This is a piece called The Train of Death, and it's about immigrants that were abandoned and locked in a train car. The way they were found is there were vultures flying over an abandoned train car, and people didn't know why, so they sent the INS to investigate, and everyone was dead when they opened the car. And so she did a piece to honor them and to honor all the lost people on the border.
Many of the stories in these quilts come right out of the women's lives. Ángeles Segura designed a quilt depicting the birth of her first son. When she got to the hospital, she was about to give birth, but she was told to wait in line. So she delivered the baby right there and had to catch him herself as he came out.
There were more ladies in front of me, so you need to wait until it's your time. I just get my little boy in my hands.
You caught your own baby?
I caught my own baby, yeah. He was very, wow.
On the quilt, a distorted woman's face cries red tears. Her two hands reach below her skirt for the newborn. The skirt is attached to the quilt and can be lifted up to show the birth.
Some of my friends say, oh, this is a good work. But some people who is close to the religion, my religion, they say, Angeles, what do you think? How are you thinking about when you are doing this? Because you are showing something on your body? How can you do that? Why? It's private. It's you.
Segura has a straightforward response. If you don't want to see the image she sewed of the actual birth, don't lift the skirt.
If you don't want to see nothing, just don't lift it.
The quilts take these women's stories beyond their community. They've exhibited throughout California and across the country. In 2009, the women published a book describing their art in both Spanish and English. And so, what started as a class on literacy has become a much larger vehicle for communication. For Latino USA, I'm Lisa Morehouse in the Anderson Valley, California.
Now, here on Latino USA, we're going to debut the first segment in our new series called Know Your Pro, where we talk to Latinos with uncommon jobs about what they do for a living. Mexican cartoonist Felipe Galindo, who goes by the name Fego, has been drawing satirical cartoons since he was 14 years old. Today, his cartoons have been published all over the world, and he's a regular contributor to The New Yorker and Mad Magazine. We spoke to him in his Washington Heights studio in uptown New York City.
My name is Felipe Galindo Gomez. My pen name is Fego. It's made up of those three names. And I have been drawing since I was like 4 years old. So all my life, I wanted to do something with drawing. In my hometown in Cuernavaca, Mexico, I remember being published. And I said, now I want to do this for a living. Or I don't know. I was really in cloud nine that day. And here I am, 4 years later. I do mostly now cartoons that have to be with everyday life situation or surreal things. One would be a guy who has a shadow, and the shadow is upside down. So where you have the head, he has the feet. The Manhattan series, for example, I'm mixing Mexican culture in New York. So you can see a Toltec sculpture in the subway, waiting for the subway, but he has a briefcase and a tie, so he's ready for work. And that's the way I was feeling myself when I moved to New York. I think the most fun is when you see the people's reaction. That's when you know it worked. When you see people smiling at your work, it's really nice.
That's the voice of Felipe Galindo, or Fego. And if you're in New York, you can see his series, Manhattitlan, at the Mark Miller Gallery. Go to our website, latinousa.org, for more details and to see Fego's drawings. Do you know a Latino pro that we should profile? We're looking for people with uncommon jobs. You know, tightrope walkers, roadkill disposers, chewing gum testers, or anything else. We'd love to hear your suggestions, so call our listener comment line at 646-571-1228. That's 646-571-1228. And for this week, that's Latino USA. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Nadia Raymond, Andres Caballero, and Michael Jones. This week, we had additional engineering from Michael Johnson, Claire Schoen, and Manoli Weatherill at NPR New York. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Our year-long look at Latinos in health is made possible by funding from Pfizer. With Pfizer Helpful Answers, a family of patient assistance programs for patients in need. At PfizerHelpfulAnswers.com.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for 40 years, working to improve health and healthcare, on the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR.